Welcome to Ask My Mice.
Love you and I, cause I love you so much. Oh, 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 I just love you. I just like help, help. I just like help. I just like you too. I just like you. I just love you. Happy New Year, I love you, say goodbye. You're going to school, and that's okay. Yum, 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 I just love you.
Good morning, and welcome to Optimize My Life, Being Well. On Wednesdays, we talk about food and health, usually primarily type 2 diabetes, but other issues regarding not only what you eat, but your relationship with food. And today we're going to talk about craving food and food cravings and why you gravitate towards certain things. Tips and tricks and how you can stave them off, but also how to not necessarily always cave into it. So good morning, Derek.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So do you tend to crave certain types of foods or do certain things?
Yeah.
And what do you do when you have those food cravings? Do you eat what you're craving?
I don't know. I don't eat them.
Hey, you don't eat them. Well, you see, you know what you do.
Yeah, I'm looking for directly with you on Country Boy.
Huh?
I'm looking for working with you on Country Boy.
Yes. So, the question is craving food? Why? And there's so many different reasons. There's so many different theories. And there's not a clear-cut answer. You know, some of it is your body's lacking in either a nutrient or a mineral, or you're lacking in something in your diet that your body's craving. There's one cause for craving. But also could be you're missing something in your taste buds. No, it can be something emotional. No, some of us are nervous eaters and we start craving food as a way to deal with our feelings. Or out of boredom, stress levels. And, you know, your personality determines your cravings as well. You know, some individuals have that addictive personality where it don't matter. And my husband's one of these. It doesn't matter what he's doing. If it's drinking, if it's a video game, if anything, never in moderation. It's always to the extremes with him. And two, it could be feelings. It could be hormone imbalances. There's so many different reasons for it. And sitting down trying to figure it out is key, but can cause a lot of headaches in the process trying to figure all that out. So that's where, you know, start figuring out, first of all, what you're craving. And these are not, this is how it is, this is what you're craving, this is how you fix it. These are ideas. These are different thoughts and studies put together by different departments of medicine. Like, for instance, in Nebraska, Department of Medicine suggests if you crave a snack and you eat it and you don't feel any better, your body is never needing that food to begin with. And here's some reasons why. They believe that the secret signals from your body that tells you exactly what you need in general, a craving can signal something out of balance, but it doesn't always mean it's a certain type of food you're craving. It might mean that you're dehydrated, you're stressed, or even just lacking sleep. You know, chocolate, for instance. You want that candy bar. So it could be that you want something sweet. But there are some nutritional benefits of dark chocolate. People who eat a small amount of dark chocolate every day as part of their total calories has proven to lower your blood pressure. And the cocoa is it's in dark chocolate more than anyone, is dense or has a high lot of magnesium, iron, and fiber. You know, if you are a plant-based or vegetarian diet, you may crave chocolate if you're low in iron or anemic. You know, another common craving is salt. And salt can mean you're dehydrated. A lot of the misconceptions are, and this is how our brain is wired and signals, is that we may be craving salty foods thinking we're hungry, but we're really dehydrated. So first step is we may not be hungry and take a drink of water. To see how you feel after that. Now, there's studies that show that people on certain medications, especially diuretics, you get rid of a lot of the salt in your diet. And when they're craving that salt, they actually might need some of that salt. So if you're one of those, check your physician or look up your medication and see if it causes salt deficiencies. Also, salt is a common stress-relieving food. Potato chips, pretzels, popcorn. So try alternatives before you eat it if you're not on those medications. Carbohydrates, another one. You know, pastas, cookies, breads. They're a quick source of energy, but they don't keep you full for long. Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. I figured if I was going to call you, at least I wanted to connect with you, and I knew the only way I could do that was to catch you on the morning show of Optimize Your Life.
Yes, and today we're talking about one of the many different reasons that we're craving different types of foods and different alternative ways to determine if you're craving that food for a health reason or just because your mind's telling you to do it. So for like example, salt, you know, a lot of diuretics and a lot of medications deplete the salt out of your system. But also when you are dehydrated, your body will crave salt. And so drinking a glass of water first is a good trick to see if you're really hungry or if it's just you need something to drink. You know, in the Army, before we go on big missions or we go on big marching trips and, you know, do our big stuff, we would load up on salt because salt would help us keep from dehydrating. It helps retain the water in your system. And my husband gets this lecture every summer because he works construction. So a lot of times in the summer, he's outside for 8-10 hours a day in the hot sun. So I always, when I know we're going to have this big heat wave, I pack them my Camelbacks full of water, but I also make them eat a salty food the night before to make sure he's not going to dehydrate and get heat struck.
Huh, that's very interesting. I find if I eat a lot of salty foods, like let's say I have spaghetti, you know, spaghetti and meatballs. Usually I have buttered, I like white spaghetti with butter on it. I salt that. And then I probably have garlic toast, which is butter and salt and garlic salt. And, you know, after I do that, and I'm, you know, actually I'm eating that at dinner time. So all the meds that I take, I have to balance that. I do obviously have to drink a lot and continue to drink a lot of water. We have a water filter, so I don't have to worry about having bottles of water or worried about if I'm going to run out or do I have enough to pace myself through the night. I can just go get fresh filtered water anytime I want. And I do. And during the night, I actually have let me get two glass water jugs with little cups that go over the top, so it's always fresh water. And I'll go through two of those every night. If I've eaten a lot of salty food, particularly in the afternoon to evening, I'm going to drink more. And obviously, I'm going to the bathroom more, too. But I've had to live with that for 4 years now. When I had the stroke, it shifted my body in all different ways. But they uncovered at that time I had a high, well, they said diabetic. And I take a medicine for that. It neutralizes that. My blood sugar is a 5 to 5.6. It stays pretty close to that all the time. And my blood pressure is 120 over 78. So I've got a I get that check as long as I maintain a steady, pretty much steady diet. It's still not, I'm not really what I would call a diabetic diet. I eat what I want to eat. I mean, I got right now in front of me, I'm sitting with a blueberry muffin just got from Tim Hortons. So, but I have to eat in the morning, particularly, because if I don't, by noon, I'm I'll get a little fruity. Little play on the food. That's how I balance out my diet. Now, it's not perfect. We're going to be working on it. You know, and one thing is spring and summer comes, we're able to grow vegetables here. We have a great climate for that. And we've always had tomatoes and peppers. Linda gets one good pan of yellow beans, which she loves. That's our garden. Well, I love corn, but that's not starch. That's not a vegetable. I had a nutritionist convince me of that. And I used to buy, Mary, I would drive along, being traveling around the country as I did, particularly when I was home area, we have some of the most phenomenal corn in the world, sweet and fresh. And I used to buy a dozen of that, come home, slice up, if I hadn't already sliced up a tomato, made a tomato salad with some tomato onion, a little Italian dressing in there, and that'd be dinner. Corn, tomato salad, and that was it.
But that's the one thing we emphasize on this show is that you can eat a piece of cake or a muffin. It's you can't eat the whole cake or the whole batch of muffins. You know, then that's the misconception. You're happy with what you eat. You're healthy with what you eat, right?
He doesn't eat a dozen ears anymore, though. He will have two ears.
Here's a big question for y'all. Tomatoes, is that a fruit or a vegetable?
A fruit.
That's right.
Well, I know I like it.
Yeah, it's a fruit, but my daughter does too.
There's nothing like taking a fresh tomato out of the garden. If you can hear me, I was eating my muffins. Take a fresh tomato off the vine, put it in the kitchen, put it in the refrigerator just to cool it down a little bit, slice it down, put some mayonnaise, maybe a little salt and pepper, sometimes, and just have a plate of sliced tomatoes. I love that. And like I said, my favorite is tomato salad. We have what's called a V-slicer, so I can slice some thick slices and chop them down into chunks, throw in a bowl in mid-afternoon, and put some Italian dressing, a little bit of spices in there. About dinner time, you pull it out, it's been sitting there, you know, it's warm. All the flavors come out, all the vitamins come out, too.
Mm-hmm.
And just have a tomato salad with maybe a hamburger or hot dogs. That's one of my favorite summertime meals.
It's one of Ariana's, too. The good news is at our house, okay, so my kids just joined Boy Scouts. And they have a bunch of different projects they have to do to earn badges. Well, two of their projects, one is a woodworking badge. So her and her dad are going to build one of those above planters.
Yeah.
And the next badge is a garden badge. You have to actually, you know, plant something and grow it and learn how to survive. They're going to fill it with tomato plants because mom's tired of not being able to have a tomato in our house. I say this because I'll buy 3 pounds of tomatoes at the grocery store. By the time, and we'll go to the store right after the radio show. So we'll go, you know, in about an hour. By the time I get home and I'll get stuff for tacos or BLTs or hamburgers, I have one tomato left out of that 3 pounds, if I'm lucky.
Really?
Yep. When you tell her she can have a treat at that grocery store, most kids go for the candy or the ice cream. Nope, it's tomatoes in the produce aisle.
So she loves cherry tomatoes.
She loves all tomatoes. She goes, Mom, I don't discriminate. I like them all.
She's funny. What a character.
Oh, yeah. And I've noticed now, if I want her to eat something that's a little different or what she calls when I make hot dish, y'all call them casseroles.
Hmm.
If I put tomatoes in it, she'll eat it. Otherwise, she just calls it slop.
We have a raised planter in our yard so the bunnies don't get it. And we found out it's the exact height for the deer. They come in the yard and eat everything right down to the dirt.
And the squirrels ate 150 bulbs. With every kind of bulb there is. Flags,
yep.
Irises. We had beautiful bulbs.
Daffodils. They ate everything.
They ate everything right down to the ground.
They dug them up and
ate the bulbs. So we also have a porch in the front of the house, and I got a 3-foot by 2-foot, a foot deep planter that I get. You know, we got potting soil, and I usually buy two already grown tomato plants where they already got buds on them, or they might have little tomatoes on them. And we grow them on the front porch. So those are, as long as the birds don't get on the porch, we have good tomatoes that don't get wrecked.
I got a book I'm going to send you. I found it at a garage sale. It's an old book. It's from the 50s. But it's really cool because it works. It tells you what kind of flowers to plant next to different vegetables to prevent bugs and what bugs, and then what flowers to plant with your vegetables and how to set up your garden for deer, squirrels, bunnies, everything.
Well, supposedly deer don't bother marigolds. My brother-in-law planted, the whole walkway, about a foot and a half wide, all the way from the driveway to their porch, with marigolds last year. They even ate the marigolds, the deer.
Yeah,
they're not supposed to eat marigolds. I don't know what happened.
I had the same problem. I know marigolds work for certain bugs. We do, like, chives, and that helps. But
we do chives.
For me, it's better tasting than onions. I'm not a big fan of onions. Only in fajitas do I eat onions.
I like the flavor of onion. Maybe they do it there too, but at our hot dog stands where they charcoal broil them, so you're getting a real picnic hot dog. Ted's is the most prolific. They've got about 22 hot dog stands, and they thin, super thin slice onions. I mean, really, really thin. And they coat them and pick, whatever mix, and they deep fry them. And you get an order of those. So you get what they call fring. That's a half French fry, half rings. But those crispy onion rings, I love. But I don't really go and eat onions. I don't mind a little onion in my tomato salad. I don't mind onion in what I cook. Now, when I have a shish kebab, I love a charcoal boil, where you got the tomato and mushrooms and the pepper. That I like. And I'll eat the idea of the sweet. I'll eat them. Otherwise, I don't eat onion. But that's just the taste.
And then onions are a blood thinner.
Well,
so people who have
good iron
levels that are out of whack or anemia issues, you want to be careful with onions because it's a natural blood thinner.
Well, Linda she's on a special diet where she takes blood thinners because she's had blood clots blood clots twice. Now, fortunately, they went to her lungs, not her brain, or she wouldn't be with us. So she can't eat dark green vegetables, which is okay with me. I hate broccoli. I don't like cauliflower. That's just bleached broccoli. And Brussels sprouts. I like asparagus. I'll eat that. So we get some vegetables in our system, but not as much as we need to. She likes beets and yellow beans. But I got cured of beets when I was young. It was very anemic. I used to have to eat beets, spinach, fried liver. I can't even look at it anymore. But I was so anemic, I used to get vitamin B12 shots every week, twice a week. I had black and blue arms my whole elementary school years because of stupid shots. I had my nurse, and I called her Rusty Needles Virginia. She was, and I swear she had rusty needles because she put them in my arm every time. One time it hurt so bad I kicked her. I was not a good patient.
iron issues, a good helping for that is using cast iron pans because your food will actually absorb the iron out of those pans.
Well, I take vitamin B12 gummies. And I drink excess, which has 4,900% of your daily allocation for vitamin B, because your body doesn't hold vitamin B. But I get 4,900 units at a shot every time I drink a can of excess. So my nutritionist told me I could and should have two or three cans of that a day. So I followed my nutritionist on that. She liked it. She bought it. She liked it. So.
See, I like liver. But I grew up in a German household. So when I make it.
I did too.
My lineage from my mother's side of the family, last name is Rosner, and from Germany, Hamburg, Germany. And from my dad's side, we got English.
Now, do you eat sauerkraut? Do you eat sauerkraut?
No, I have Linda. She does our sauerkraut for the family. She buys it for hot dogs, whenever she wants. She likes it. I don't like cabbage. Yeah, well,
God, you sound like my husband. I always tease
yeah.
him he's a bad German because he don't like any of the German food.
Right. We went to Germany. I went, I get a hamburger. That's about it. I didn't eat any of their stuff. I got spaghetti.
That's him. No, like when you make sauerkraut, if you cook it with a little bit of pork, it helps absorb some of that sourness.
Mom used to buy a rack of ribs, and she had a,
yep.
a speckled blue enamel roaster pan, and she'd prepare the ribs, and then had the sauerkraut, and then went underneath the ribs, and then sat on top. And then she cut up, so at that time, little hot dogs she would put around them. And then she put it in, and when she got a good burnt, it's black. Now, the ribs, I like crispy ribs today because that's what she cooked. But, they were cooked. But the sauerkraut, when it was black and crispy, I could eat it, like that, but I never liked it a lot. But I know, Linda just loves it stacked up on a hot dog. She just loves that.
That sounds good. I think I'm going to make that for dinner tonight. No, when I make liver, yeah. I'll fry it up for me. And then what I do is I take, I'll make like hamburger helper. So I take a couple pieces of it and chop it up real fine and fry it up with the hamburger so the kids don't even know.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, what liver is high, vitamin B12, it's high. It's got a lot of stuff too, but it's a good protein still. But you gotta like it. I was cured of it. When you have to eat food that you have to eat because the doctor and your mother agrees to it, after a while you don't agree to it. So that is
key that we talk about a lot on this show is the mindset when it comes to food. When you're having either going on a diet that we don't say diet on the show because I don't believe in diets, but when you have to have that lifestyle change and you're told you can't eat this, you can't have this, or you have to eat this, you have to eat that, you end up not wanting it. Well, if you can't have to eat it, you don't want it because you're forced into it. But if you're changing it, then you end up, craving all the other foods that you can't have because you can't have them. And this is, your mind plays such a big part with your relationship with food. And, the first steps are kind of a mind game where you do a lifestyle change. And this is where we emphasize so much. It's okay to have a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Have a snack-sized candy bar once in a while, or have a muffin or a piece of cake. Just don't eat the whole thing. Or don't buy a whole bag of candy and eat the whole thing in one sitting. Moderation is key. The more you restrict something from your diet, the more you're going to want it.
That's true.
You think back when you're a kid and you're told you can't touch that. You think back, Christmas time, your parents start putting the presents underneath the tree and you have that urge. You want to see what it is because you can't. You can't have it.
My brother raised my younger, my nephew that way. He used to, he would tell him the opposite of everything he wanted, and I told him, I said that's not a healthy way to do it for a long term. I'm one item now and again, but when you do it on everything and all the time, it's the world. You're telling him to think contrary to everything in the world. He's not going to be able to go very far in this world because his mindset is going to be when he has to work in a job situation, they're going to say this, this, and this, and he's going to say no, because you taught him to to think opposite of what you learn. That's reverse.
It's not reverse psychology. It's stupidity.
You can't do it on a regular basis. Our mind isn't set up to operate that way.
You know, and that is so true, and that's part of the problem we struggle with, this generation of kids, because of video games and tablets and everything, you know, for that are accessible now. They don't have to wait for anything. You know, back, I know I remind everybody in our household, especially my husband, when the computer's slow or the internet's slow, I always say, remember dial-up? And she just looks at me and gives me a dirty look. But, you know, you remember back to things when it wasn't so instant. For us, it's easy. But, you know, kids now.
We've taught ourselves.
Yeah. You know, it's the same with food. You know, we live in this world where there's no in-betweens. We are so rigid in our thinking. We do this a lot with our kids. We restrict them from everything, or we give them everything they want. So we don't teach them how to eat healthy. We supply everything so they, and set everything up for them so they never learn it. And in my house, it's a little bit different. They have the junk food, but they have the healthy stuff. And we teach how to eat, because the more you restrict it, when they get to that age or that ability to have it, they're going to eat a lot of it because it's available to them. Teaching is the key to everything. And showing the patience and teaching them patience.
Well, I think if we talk about it too, that helps reinforce. You're going to have a habit that you start. It has to be reinforced with positive accolades, and there could be reward. Not the reward. I'll give you a candy bar if you do this. That's not teaching a kid how to eat right.
No, and they actually just did a study on this. They took 20 kids, divided them up into four categories, and had let them draw. One group had to draw pictures just to draw pictures. Another group got some big fancy reward for every time they drew something. And the other group, they just gave them what they wanted, you know, as they're drawing. And they found that the more rewards you give somebody, their motivation, their drive actually decreases. That they will only do things, even if they loved it, they will only do it before that reward. And even then, they're not going to want to do it over time. And the biggest thing is what they're finding, we're learning and finding out, is that, you know, as parents, it's very hard to, especially when you've got young kids or you've got special kids, where you find yourself always saying no or yelling. And it's not changing.
It doesn't sound exciting to me at all.
It doesn't.
Yelling.
Well, it does. Yeah, it sucks. But when they've found and learned, and I do this in my house all the time, especially because I have a little boy that likes to test the waters in every aspect of life, is the more you praise when they do good things and you more ignore the bad things, they will start to, and this is not an instant thing. This takes a little bit of time because you got to rewire the thought process and you have to stick with it. But the more you praise the good and emphasize the good things they're doing, the more apt they're going to continue doing the good, and less they're going to do the bad.
Can I give you another example of that, Mary?
Of course.
It has to do with the very program that our princess developed.
Ariana created, remember, she came home and wanted to have a, she wanted to have a kindness club like Captain Len. And what it did, it gave a positive way, a tool for teachers or leaders to turn around. You can't beat a negative bullying attitude out of somebody. You can't cowbrow them to death. That won't solve it either. But if you surround them with people that are doing or achieving or living life happy in the kindness side of the world, and you encourage it, and you help kids try and find new ways to be kind, that person who's not gets attracted to that and is not less likely, or will that activity or attitude or, you know, personality trait lessens because the other side of things is so attractive. And the rewards are so much better. And they feel better. Even the bully feels better when he learns and has an experience where he does something and gets acknowledged for it. That's really powerful. Same identical.
And that's the thing, you know, when I was going through my training and looking at all these different books to deal with kids, especially autistic kids, you know, a lot to do with my daughter because she's just not motivated because things are hard. And she don't like doing things that are hard because she's so afraid of doing it wrong. And, you know, some of the suggestions were, you know, get her the toy that she wants and put it up as a reward. And she's got to work towards that. We tried it once, and then she got into this logic, and this is what we're talking about, of, oh, well, if I keep doing this, I'll get another thing. I'll get a better thing. I'll keep going. Or it stops right after the award happens. So we had to rewire her and get her to understand that we're doing this. You have to do things, especially like her schoolwork, because it's going to help you later on in life. And the gratification of doing something to get it done right is more important than what you get on the other side. And teaching them how, you know, it's just being good is good. It makes you happy. And it was so cute because we started Boy Scouts last week, or this week. We have a lock-in on Friday. But, you know, she comes up to me and Dad, and she goes, you guys have to join Boy Scouts, too, so that you don't feel bad about not getting badges. I go, Ariana, we get the badges when you get the badges. We don't have to join. Plus, Mom's already the member of the Boy Scouts, so it doesn't matter. And she goes, oh, okay. And she was good. But she felt bad when all the kids, the leader, what do you call him? I'm still learning all the lingo. Another language that I have to learn. Went and picked up all the scarves for all the kids for different, because we live in such a small town that we have our whole troop is all different levels. And we break off into smaller groups for each bears and cubs and whatever you are. And she felt bad because not all the kids got scarves.
Are you a weevil?
She is a bear.
Oh, so she's up there already.
They go by grade level.
Okay. Roar.
Yeah, she's learning. Mom's got to camp again. But it was so cute to see her, you know, getting upset. It wasn't that she didn't get a scarf. She felt bad because a couple of the other kids didn't get scarves, too, to go with their uniforms. And seeing how she is so much to include everybody else and always feel bad when someone else is left out was really cute. And
that's a sense of awareness of her surroundings. That's a good thing.
It is. And she's just got this logic that, you know, a hug cures everything.
Well, you know what? I would say most 99% of the times, it's right. It would. See, the one thing that we're lacking, particularly when we just went through 3 years of government, media, everything, newspaper, whatever you read, whatever you saw, whatever you listened to, television, movies, whatever, the whole thing was separation. Don't touch. Do not be embraced. Do not become involved. Distance. That was the predominant thought process being pushed by the tyrannical government we have and the communists. See, Russia, they don't hug.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long world of not hugging because they don't want people to become. The human touch and the value of life has been so diminished under the communist power. They're godless. That's why we shouldn't let any government get together and build and join up with another government that are communists, because you're multiplying the enemy against you. Same thing holds true. If you can't embrace, you know, I think some of the greatest things, sports. How many sporting events at the end of the sporting events, let's say it's Little League, at the end of the game, doesn't matter who won or lost or who won the most, at the end of the game, they go by and they walk to each other and they go through a line and they shake hands.
Mm-hmm.
They touch, they feel the sense there was a real person behind that team you were playing. Same thing with hockey, same thing. I mean, you know, I went to a game of, you know, a hockey game. I really went to a fight in a hockey game took place. Their whole thing is about recognizing and respecting the other person after combat. In almost every sport, it's like that. Some of it's men or women's. The idea is that you have a respect and you appreciate and you, because you have a touch.
And
that's
on that,
so important.
One thing we're going to talk about on Monday's show coming up next week is that, you know, we have a whole generation of kids who don't know emotions very well. And they have done studies and found self-soothing. When you let your kids cry themselves to sleep when they're very young, actually is damaging to them, because when you're very young, your brain's still developing. And when you're not holding, and there's been, you know, studies and there's been theories, and, you know, old school was, you know, carrying your babies too long or holding them too much causes, you know, that whole attachment problem. What they're finding out is that when you don't pick up your kids when they're upset, you don't hug them, you don't, from a very newborns, that part of their brain that develops that empathy and that emotion doesn't develop properly.
Yeah, it's retarded. I'm sorry. The words, it's damaged. It's bruised.
Yeah. And how crucial it is to show your kids. And it's, you know, it's really hard now because parents and kids don't unplug, don't unwind, don't sit and talk to each other, because we're so glued on our electronics, TVs, computers, phones, pads. You know, we stop. And I went through this. It's, you know, it's a German thing too. You know, once you get to a certain age, you're considered an adult. And so you're not hugged anymore. You know, I remember growing up, once I got, you know, to about middle school age, 12 or so, my grandma didn't give us hugs anymore.
Because you were no longer a child.
Correct. But the day I left for boot camp was the first time in years I saw her cry and give me a hug.
It was a spine of the separation of all of that. There was so much finality in it. That caused the pain.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to break this cycle and go back to where we teach our kids. It's okay to give hugs. It's okay to talk. It's okay to cry. And having that, them knowing that you're there to support them no matter what. And it's not just words. You need to physically show them. When you're talking to them, you know, putting your phone down, making eye contact, paying attention to what they're doing, being involved in their life. You know, how many sports, when your kids are in sports, you know, how many times do you just drop them off and leave? or they're in something else. No, being there to sit there for hours, supporting whatever they're doing, just so they know you're there, is crucial. Even if it's something as trivial as parent conferences, being involved. You know, and some schools are developing policies where it's required for parents to actually be involved. Like the school is one of them. Because of the lack of involvement.
Well, I think in today's world with the, and I'll just say this, and it's not an excuse, but the fact that we've sold our kids out to unions, which are faceless, godless, socialistic, the state is more important about anything, and that includes kids. So now you got a whole, I don't know, generations, about five generations going back as far as when I was in school. That's where it started. That's where it started, and now it leads the way. And now all of a sudden, when parents are waking up to the fact that what they assumed was going to happen is the people that they turned their kids over to, those people were going to care about those kids just as much as they did. And they don't. They can't. They're not the parents. So now we do have some new challenges and new ways that we have to look at it to try and regain that again, plus add on the other stuff that has been brought on socially. So we have an opportunity, and that's a good thing. So you have the Kindness Club that isn't a replacement for, but it certainly helps support the whole idea that we're talking about, both from a health and food part, but also emotion part.
It does. And the kindness program that we promote is about doing acts of kindness, but also it goes one step farther. It talks about how it's okay to be you. It's okay not to be in the social norm, to be out of the box. You know, and I always think back to the 80s. That was the big push for kids back in the 80s to be different. You know, we had television shows that were family friendly, like Full House and Punky Brewster, about kids doing things to be who they are. It was good to be who you are. And we've kind of gone backwards from that. Now we are forcing our teaching our children how to be in a category, how to be in a box. If you're not in that box, there's something wrong with you, no matter what the box is. And it's really hard for kids not to want to be in that box because they feel left out when they're not included. And this is where we give them and teach them the power of, you know, being you and being who you are and the way God made you. You will have the friends. You will have what you need to be included because you are you. People gravitate towards you. That, you know, friends and people gravitate to strong, independent people more than the followers. When you look at, you know, little cliques in schools or, you know, in life, who's the leader, the strong one, the one that controls everything? People gravitate towards those people. But that's all a lot of different things we're going to talk about on Monday, so that you can see and understand how important, as an adult, what you say, what you do, and what you think affects your kids, but also affects other kids you're around. Because what they see around them, they copy. And you don't realize that a lot of times, you know, even, you know, how you talk about yourself. And kids have ears. They hear everything, no matter if they're in the room or not.
Well, I think back of sort of an outlandish example when you were just saying about kids hearing and understanding everything. When the attorney that worked with her in her office. He and his wife had their little daughter at the dinner table. And they were serving up, I think it was like macaroni and cheese or something. And the little girl looked at it and put her fork towards it or whatever. And she looks up and goes, "What the hell is this?" Now, you know, we can laugh about it. We do. It's funny. How do you answer that one? The truth of the matter is they got that from hearing how their mother answered something or someone influenced them, you know.
Yep.
And I think you just told us about something like that happened just with her. I think it was Ariana might have happened to her. I don't know, but it was one of those examples where, well, she picked it up from somebody. And most likely, unless it's a television show, it's probably us, the parents. And sometimes owning up to that is a little tough to do because we don't want to know that we slept that easy. We do.
Yeah, and that's it, too. And Ariana, she said that a couple times, and I'm like, excuse me? And then she'll change it to what the heck. But, you know,
yeah.
Her new kick is your – you know, April Fool's Day, we're going to launch a special edition and we're going to launch a new show weekly after that, a comedy show. And it's stand-up queen comedy because laughter is so important to your health, physically and mentally. And so I was going through some of the old comedy. And Country Boy sent me a video of, I can't remember what his name is, but he always said, you know, when he did bad things, he always said, the devil made me do it. And so we were watching the Looney Tunes. And, you know, the old cartoons always had the angel on one side and the devil on the other side.
Yes.
So now when she does something bad, she goes, the devil made me do it. She does something good, she goes, the angel made me do it. So now we're explaining to her, you know, you have to tell the devil no.
You're still
That's
in charge.
That's bad. That's right. We had to figure a way to counter her logic. We always end up in some kind of hole and they have their logic moment.
They box you in, Mary.
They do. And it's
that's
my fault.
That's why we like playing Uncle Ron and Aunt Linda. Because when we get to those points in time, we can give them back and let you deal with it. That's totally true, but it's pretty true.
They will figure out a way to outsmart anything you come back as. You know, David's developed this thing about whining, and he's not really whining. He's just whining just to fake. But he's just frustrated, and he doesn't want to use the word, so he just whines. And so we're trying to get him to use his words and explain what's going on, why. What's going on? Use your words. Tell us what you need. And he was whining. So Dad told him, babies. Well, only babies whining. So then he'd walk around with his thumb in his mouth, trying to suck on his thumb, saying he's a baby, and do a baby whine. And then Dad turned around. It was more of a snap at me or a smart comment towards me, but he told him, you know, only girls whine. So to get back at Dad, David turns around, goes in Ariana's room, picks out this big, frilly, pretty Barbie dress of Ariana's. High-pitched voice, he's whining. And he only does this when Dad's around. That's how I knew he's doing it, just to mess with Dad. And he's whining like a girl. Like, Dad, figure out a new one now because I want to see what he's going to do just to mess with you some more. Because I'm entertained by all this.
Yeah, now you have to change it. You're whining like a loser.
Yeah. Let's see what he thinks of that one or how he comes up with a new one for that one.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what comedy you come up with that one. So
David,
I'm gonna buzz off if that's okay with you.
Yeah, we're almost out of time for today. We're just gonna do a quick introduction of the noon show. So we are almost out of time for today. Thank you for joining me. And today at noon, join us for our second show on Jesus. And we're going to talk about the man beyond the myth. We're going to talk about all the things, you know, we talk a lot about him being a pacifist, and they talk about him being a pacifist and turning the other cheek and stuff like that. But we're going to talk about how he stood up for what was right, how he didn't get pushed over when he was confronted about things, how he stood up for individuals. For instance, Mary Magdalene. When people didn't think it was appropriate for him to take her in and teach her his teachings because of who she was. He was supposed to only mentor the good ones. You know, when he flipped tables and messed up synagogues because they weren't following the teachings of what they teach. And we're going to also talk about one of the Bible quotes that is most misinterpreted. One is not judging. And two, turning the other cheek. Because that doesn't mean that you just don't stand up for what is right, or standing up for what's right.
Don't lay down to be a doormat.
Exactly. And we're coming to that phase in life where it's more important to stand there with a cell phone recording something instead of actually helping somebody. Because you don't want to get involved. So join us today at noon Eastern. Go ahead, Ron.
I was just going to say that'll be an interesting show. I saw anybody listening or catching this on a recording. I encourage them to come in and listen to Mary and listen and catch what she'll have speaking. Thanks again, Mary. Appreciate your show.
Thank you. So have a good day. See you back here in a couple hours. Bye for now.